Okay, ready? Everybody settle and action.
Warning, Critique Revolve contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended,
you're one ugly motherfucker. Go ahead. Make my day.
Well, that's great. That's just fucking great, man.
You rub the clothes on the skin, it doesn't matter.
Most becoming night. Most atomic.
Wow!
There are
several
short round.
Very
smashed.
English motherfucker, do you speak it?
They put big stuff in the
Detective Raven, I'm Judge Maddox. And this is the Mercy Capital Court, a judicial system powered by artificial intelligence.
Hold on, just wait a second.
With crime rates soaring, lawmakers voted for mercy by acting as judge, jury, and executioner.
You're before this court today charged with the murder of your wife.
All right, welcome to the show. I am Michael Flores, and this is Critique Revolve, Rayman Digital's exclusive film, media, and television podcast. All right, Dave, hello.
Hello, everybody.
You and I are going to be talking about Mercy, which is a new sci-fi thriller starring Chris Pratt and Rebecca Ferguson, and it just hit theaters on January 23rd. It's directed by Timur Bekmambetov and written by Marco Van Bell. Mercy drops us into a near future Los Angeles in 2029, where the justice system isn't run by juries or judges with robes, but instead an AI judge named Maddox, played by Rebecca Ferguson. Pratt plays Detective Chris Raven, a guy who actually helped build this AI-driven court system, and now, in a brutal twist of fate, wakes up strapped to an execution-style chair, accused of murdering his wife, and he's only got 90 minutes to prove he's innocent before the AI decides his fate. Okay, so the film folds together real-time tension, screen life style storytelling, apps, smartphones, and a lot of digital evidence flying across the screen as our detective, our protagonist, scrambles to make sense of what happened and clear his name. Now, David, critics and audiences are already split. Some find its premise a timely mashup of, say, Minority Report vibes and modern AI fears, while others think it's a bit overloaded and possibly even uneven in execution. My thoughts, however, fall somewhere in between. The movie is aesthetically intriguing, conceptually prudent, but logically flawed to the point where if the frenetic nature of the plot slows down for just a second, you will begin to realize just how the entire film can collapse under its own poor logic. So superficially entertaining, I was not bored in the least, but the moment you start asking questions, problems immediately arise.
Yes.
Dave, what are your initial thoughts?
I'm right there with you. I actually, when I first heard about Mercy, I saw the the trailer last year, and I was like really intrigued with it. I was like hoping to get something like a film noir type of futuristic look at AI, a police procedural, right?
Wow.
That would...
Definitely didn't get that.
Did not get that. And I was really intrigued to see if specifically this director could pull this off, because when you look at his filmography...
I like him.
I like his filmography. Yeah. The movies that he's done for our listeners, he's done movies like Wanted, which is really good.
He started in the Russian cinema.
Yes.
With Day Watch and Night Watch.
And Night Watch.
Two like dark fantasy films.
Yes.
Think of it like Lord of the Rings, but it takes place in contemporary times.
In contemporary times. And like the other ones that I really like from his filmography, you have Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, which is an excellent exploitation film.
Fun movie.
It is a fun movie. And that's the thing about this filmmaker that I was really intrigued by. He makes fun films.
Yeah.
Films that you can actually go to and just sit down and watch it. You don't have to think too hard.
And largely not be insulted intellectually.
And not be insulted. With this one, so I went in with a lot of expectations behind it. Because especially nowadays, I am very fascinated with stories about AI. I want to actually see what story writers out there, because you can gauge what the world views a hot button topic like, you know, in technology like AI through us writers. You can see what the gauge is like. And unfortunately, or fortunately, if, depending on how you look at it, you can see this film and you could see how AI can be very misconceived. Like there's
poorly deployed.
The concept is really there. It's, you could see that the writer was actually trying to reach for something.
It's talking about something relevant. It is about
something relevant.
And I think it does do a good job in that. In dissecting a real potential problem with AI, correct?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And like bringing into the core reason why AI, what AI number one needs and what AI basically lacks. And I think that that basically was being trying to push there, especially with the, I guess you could say the relationship between Chris Pratt's character of Detective Raven and the judge,
Maddox.
Maddox.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. The judge is playing off of, off of Detective Raven. And there were times when, you know, the two would go toe to toe with each other over the concepts of logic, how logic should work. But then, you know, like
there is no logic.
Yeah. Apparently. Unfortunately, you would get there and then it would go out the window with the next problem. And I'm going, okay, I could tell that basically that the writer was, as I said, trying to get there, but we are far from actually truly understanding AI.
Yeah. So let me see if I can paraphrase or interpret what you were saying correctly. I want to make sure we're on the same page. So essentially, strong premise, relevant premise, strong social commentary, but the logic pertaining to the AI itself is missing.
Is missing. It's the execution.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in an era where we have just been inundated with real world commentary and AI, you've got to bring your A game to the table, especially when there are movies like Ex Machina, Megan, and this past year's Companion with Sophie Thatcher, or Megan Fox's Subservience, which was, in my opinion, a highly underrated AI film with exceptional social commentary and the ramifications of artificial intelligence and job replacement, labor issues. It was a smart look into the potential issues of AI. So when a film like this comes out, Dave, and tackles the contemporary issue and influence of AI, and the film wrestles with the notions of truth and the difference between facts and truth, you know, this idea that facts simply being black and white and that truth lies someplace in the gray, which I believe is was an actual comment made by Detective Raven in the movie. That's a powerful and philosophically sound argument to push forward, which is really what the film is saying broadly. Now, Mercy, for all intents and purposes, is what I'd classify as a post-truth narrative, you know, which is a film that captures the epistemological conditions brought on by AI and technology more broadly. But when you loosen the logic of your narrative to accommodate such things, you ultimately fail, in my opinion, when you are trying to say something socially relevant and it's baked into the DNA of your series. But in order to say it, you write logical pitfalls that are not something you have to carefully look for, but they're blatantly in your face. For example, there is this idea that throughout the course of this movie, the 90 minutes that Detective Raven has to prove himself innocent before he's executed, in order to get to that, you get this idea that the AI, Maddox, is learning about certain things through having a conversation with the detective. And I find that in itself really stupid, because AI itself, we know just in today's world with ChatGPT and all these different large language models, there is a learning aspect. Before yes. you deploy your AI, you teach it. You teach it basics. And the fact that there's a scene in this movie where the AI looks at Detective Raven and is confused by this notion of truth being somewhere in between facts.
And I'm like, I was looking at the screen going, you're a judge.
Yes. If you're a judge that have been given the power to execute people and you don't understand the nuances of truth, and also you completely lack any understanding of a hunch. There's a moment where Detective Raven is talking to the judge, who is an artificial intelligence. Let me just say that again. Who's in charge of putting people to death.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to tell and explain to the judge, the AI judge, what a hunch is.
Exactly.
Because they don't even know what a hunch is. How does a fucking artificial intelligence not know the basic definition of a word?
How does an artificial intelligence, Mike, that can see everything? Because that's the thing that they posted, they posited in this story, was the fact that the Mercy system is able to see everything. Everything. And yet
it doesn't.
It doesn't. So,
and David, really quick, put a pin in that, because I want you to jump back in the moment I say this. Okay. So it doesn't see everything. And I understand what it's trying to do. It's trying to say that we should exercise caution when it comes to the deployment of AI. That's the message, right? But that's where bad writing simply is made bad in order to justify a plot point that you want to make.
Yes.
That is the epitome of bad fucking writing.
Yes, because it is basically washing your hands and going, oh, here's this answer.
Yeah. Well, we want the detective to express this idea of hunches and how the human intuition, this is not what they say, but this is what they're attempting to say.
That
human intuition will always be much more powerful and a better way to investigate the differences between truth and falseness, right? Yes. So you're trying to express this idea about human intuition, and you're trying to push this idea that human intuition will always be a better choice, that we should privilege this over AI, that we shouldn't be deploying AI in these types of big, you know, potential situations that have lasting ramifications on real people. But in order to do that, you can't just change some writing and make it work. Instead, you dumb down the AI.
The AI, yes.
In a way that's, it's not even about, like, for example, like when you look at something like, say, Star Trek or even Terminator and Terminator 2, where Arnold is learning about morality. And yeah. How he shouldn't shoot people. He understood what not to shoot people meant. And he knew basic words.
Exactly.
He was just being taught morality and what humans do. Hey, I don't want you shooting people. You can't just shoot people, I believe is what John Connor said to him.
Yeah.
And he learned and asked, well, why? But he understood what shooting was.
Yeah.
In this movie, you have an artificial intelligence who doesn't even know the basic definitions or understandings of human behavior.
Exactly. And that was the thing that I was getting really frustrated with towards the end is like, so Judge Maddox can see how humans act. She sees like, she apparently can see the big twist that happens in the end that you find out.
Yes. Keyword watching everyone, right?
And she's watching everyone. And you mean to tell me
she hasn't learned?
She hasn't learned? She hasn't figured out, oh, you know what? That's probably a bit of an issue that you have with the justice, with the verdict. And that should affect your, essentially, it should have affected the percentage that they put, the number percentage that they put up there as kind of like this thing. Oh, they have to be under,
yeah.
I think, what was it? 92% to actually, 90,
yeah, something like that.
They have to be under 92% to actually be found not guilty or something. And it's like, so if you saw the incriminating evidence, your freaking system should have actually immediately have gone down.
And a part of me is thinking that, okay, they were trying, that this is built into the intentions of the story. Like part of what they were attempting to say was possibly that AI shouldn't be deployed in this fashion or in this particular situation dealing with life-changing decisions like this, like dealing with the real execution of prisoners, because AI may not be up to the task. They may not fully understand human behavior and human society. But that's why this is even stupider. Chris Pratt's character, Detective Raven, is the one who created the system. Yes. That helped create it. And he didn't bother to teach it to make sure it understands crime, human intuition, passion, truth, non-truth, post-truth, epistemology. It doesn't understand philosophy. It doesn't understand things. If the message is we should be hesitant and exercise caution before we deploy AI because of those things, that's a solid message I can get behind. But you dumb down the entire story in order to express that thought. And that ultimately is what I find the biggest issue with this entire movie, is that the thoughts make sense. I can get behind the commentary on artificial intelligence, but in order to get there, you're asking us to be stupid.
Yes. You're thinking that your audience is dumb.
And you know why it makes me so mad? Because if this was just a dumb movie, I'd be like, well, this is a fucking dumb movie, and I wouldn't get mad. But this is the contradiction. I found the movie engrossing. It was entertaining.
Entertaining.
I was not bored. It wasn't until I started
really digging into
thinking
it.
Thinking about it. I'm like, none of this makes sense. This is really stupid. The plot is incredibly flimsy.
You know what the funny part is like, I've kind of came to that conclusion, especially since I started thinking about his filmography. Wanted has the same issue that this film has.
Yes.
Which is, great concept. I love what you're trying to do, but you're expecting the dummying of a person's, of the audience's, you know, logic. Like a person's going to stand right there, right at that perfect spot. So he could shoot him and it'll go through the donut. It'll go through the coffee cup. It'll go through the window. And I'm sorry that type of logic breeds bad story writing.
Yeah.
Bad storytelling. And especially with this film, as I said in the very beginning, I had a lot of really excited ideas about what Mercy could actually be like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mike, could you imagine a film noir AI story?
Yeah.
A detective working with a AI as a procedural. That would be pretty damn dope.
Yeah,
because you can explore things about like, okay, what does it mean to be an AI?
Yeah, but at this point, we're just writing a better version. We're writing our own stories.
We're writing our own stories at that point.
Yeah, but I do get what you're saying. I actually had some high hopes for this.
I had high hopes.
Because I like the director. He is, I don't want to call him a superficial director, but he is, I would consider him an auteur. He has a signature style. And for the most part, I enjoy his movies. They're spectacles, but they are fun.
Yeah.
In fact, that is the strength of the movie, is that it is a spectacle. If you can let go of some of the logic, then I think some people, or I should say the logical fallacies, I think some people could in fact enjoy this movie, especially because it was made for an IMAX and 3D presentation.
Yeah.
And if you look at how the movie was shot, I wish we were able to see it in IMAX. We were not given that opportunity as press, because you can tell there are a lot of really cool looking scenes. In fact, believe it or not, the most interesting scenes take place in the courtroom, because yes, the courtroom essentially is almost like Star Trek's holodeck.
Mm-hmm.
And it presents the evidence in holographic form, essentially, or virtual reality is probably a better way of saying it, a type of virtual reality. So when the case takes them to a house that's on fire, or it takes them to an explosion, those things take place in the courtroom.
Yeah.
And the defendant, Chris Pratt, who's strapped to a chair, is in the middle of the scene. So it makes it that much more engrossing. It pulls us in to those heightened scenes of reality. And it's very, very fun.
It's immersive.
That's the word I was looking for. Immersive. And if you see this in IMAX and 3D, that's probably the best way to see it. I think people will enjoy it, because it's one of those movies that's designed specifically for that. And it wasn't the cheesy 3D where they purposely do things like pointing at the screen like they did in the mid 2000s to show you that it's 3D, and the individual or the actor's index finger comes at you. You know, this was creative. Not just immersive, but it was also, it didn't break the illusion. There was no moment where we're like, oh, that scene was for 3D. It was just shot in a way that allowed the viewer to be pulled into the scenes. And because of that, I feel like an IMAX presentation is probably the way to go if you're going to go see this.
Oh, absolutely. Especially one of the biggest surprises to me in this, in this film that I thought would be a detriment to it. And I have nothing against the man. I really don't. But
who? Chris, I'm sorry. Oh, Chris Pratt.
But Chris Pratt is not the greatest thespian in the world.
He's capable.
He's capable. And he kind of, he usually has one note. But here, I was pleasantly surprised with those scenes that you're talking about.
Obviously, you haven't seen the Garfield movie yet.
But when you actually see the scenes that you were talking about, where it's so immersive, Pratt gives a really strong performance.
Yeah, he's good in this.
Because he literally feels the part.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's not like, you know, Chris Pratt as jokey Star-Lord Chris Pratt. No, he sounds like a true detective. And I'm like going, you know what? Chris Pratt kind of won me over in this one. And it's interesting to me that basically, just like you said, it really, the film is immersive because of the way it's shot, but also because of like some of the acting that happened in it.
Yeah, the acting is strong. The directing is strong. The writing is not.
The writing's
not. The directing, which is where Timur really shines. It's his directing. That's why I was saying I do consider him an auteur, and he's visually stunning. I mean, Day Watch, Night Watch, Wanted, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Slayer are beautifully rendered films.
Oh, yeah.
They're spectacle, but they are gorgeous looking in that spectacle. This is no different. This is a very pretty movie, and the acting does help it along as well. You have Rebecca Ferguson, who did a great job in what she was told to do as Judge Maddox. She emoted correctly when she was learning or uncovering things that are new to her. You can see her consciousness kind of increase. She goes from being this more stoic artificial intelligence, and then by the end of the movie, if you notice, she was more human-like.
Yeah. It's almost like she was learning.
Which is also the stupidity of the movie, because she should have learned a long time ago.
Yes, yes. That was the thing that I basically had to, it was funny because I walked out with you. I was like, oh, it was really cool. And then the logic hit me as I got into my car, I'm like, wait a minute. Why is Judge Maddox just learning this now? Yeah. If she's the mercy system, you need this system to be, you know, pretty much at its peak right from day one.
Yeah. So you had Chris Pratt, Rebecca Ferguson, Kaylee Rice, I believe is how you say her name. She was the secondary in the recent season of True Detective with Jodie Foster, which she was probably one of the better parts of that season of True Detective. I struggled with that season, but she was actually very good in the role that they put her in. Then you had Annabelle Wallace, Chris Sullivan, Kylie Rogers, Jeff Pierre, Rafi Gavron. So you had an assortment of actors that were also very well utilized. There was no miscastings. Everything worked together. And again, you got to remember, most of these actors we saw through view screens.
Yeah.
Which was part of the fun. I mean, there were times where they found seamless ways to go from view screen to camera to drone to where then suddenly we feel we're actually in the scene, but in all actuality, we're still in the courtroom. So there are some interesting, like, synergistic type of directing choices and editing choices, which, again, Timur Bekmambetov, this is where he excels. And this is why the movie is not remotely boring and why it is entertaining, because his directing style and his synergistic editing techniques are very strong.
Very, very strong, yeah.
So let's see here, the last bit here. So the overall reception on the review aggregator Rotten Tomatoes, Jesus Christ, 20% right now on Rotten Tomatoes.
And I don't think that that's true.
No.
I don't think it's worth that.
No. Now, the website's consensus reads, constricting its 2 stars inside an airless presentation of a clunky techno-thriller premise, Mercy is tedious enough to make you cry uncle. See, I don't agree with that. Sometimes I think we all feel the same thing. Like, when something's wrong with a movie, David, I think most of us can understand there's something wrong. But not all of us can understand what is wrong with it. It takes a bit of understanding of film
intelligence
and writing to understand what that problem is. No, because there are people at times who watch something that, like my mom or my father or my brother, who are like, yeah, I didn't like it. I'm not sure why. And then we start talking about it and I explain to them and they're like, that is why. That's why. Most people just don't understand why they don't like something, but we all can agree there's something off about it. And I don't find the issue being that they constricted the 2 actors inside this airless room.
No,
In fact, to me, that's one of the strengths of it, because it allows the actors to shine.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is like, I honestly never felt that it was restrictive viewing the movie.
It was actually the opposite, right?
It was the opposite, because I felt like we were getting to see a very interesting take on a possible future where AI is. I mean, the scenes with the police and the hover cycles,
yeah,
were pretty interesting.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah,
and like the idea, also the thing I liked about is the world building. The world building that he did here was actually kind of fun. I mean, like getting to see a possible future like this, and then kind of tying it into a lot of, I guess you could say, topics that are hot buttons today, whether it's the overpopulation, the homelessness, the police brutality, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And tying it into a story about AI, it felt very actually unrestrictive. It felt like there was a big world around us that we would, that actually, honestly, I wouldn't mind if he actually did more about it. Now, would I really want to actually see better writing and better logic takes on this world? Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because as people have probably realized listening to us, that's its one weakness.
Yeah. So the audience score is a little different. And that's, I kind of figured that, David, because like I said, the movie is entertaining.
It is.
So if you look at the audience score, it is vastly different. It's 80%. Now, I don't know if I agree with that. But
slow your roll there.
Yeah, we're probably in the middle someplace. But
absolutely.
But that I would say for the average movie audience, I think that's a decent way to say, yes, this movie's entertaining. In fact, there's one reviewer here that says kind of cheesy, silly, and even deliberately dumb, but you can't deny the entertainment value. I agree with that. It is incredibly entertaining. You just have to check your logic mind.
Yeah.
Out. Wait, check it off. No, switch it off. There we go. You can switch off your mind a bit.
It's kind
during
of
certain portions.
It's kind of funny when you actually take the critic score and the audience score and actually find the average. You're right. I mean, I don't know what your score is, but my score is pretty much, you know, right in that sweet spot that the average is, which is kind of creepy to me.
Yeah. So overall, the movie was entertaining. If you are about sheer spectacle and entertainment, then I would probably suggest you should watch this and you'd probably enjoy it. If you are nitpicky Thomas type,
oh, you're going to hate it.
You won't enjoy it.
You're not going to enjoy it.
I didn't roll my eyes until the hunch part. I think that's where I kind of looked at you and said, what? The AI doesn't know what a hunch is?
That's when you turned to me and I was like cracking up. I'm like, shh.
It was about, I'd say 60%, maybe 70% through the movie at that point. And that's when I'm like, okay, are you purposely creating dumb situations so that your plot can progress? And that is the biggest stain of the movie, is that you are making logical pitfalls simply so that you can permit the plot to move forward with as little friction as possible.
Yes.
And that, I think, is going to be the detriment of this film, ultimately. I probably would say this is Timur's worst movie. I've seen all his films. Let me go through his list real fast.
I was going to say,
more formally, before I say that. Let's see here, Dave. Do you have his list pulled up or no?
As a director, okay, so Timur has done Mercy. His movies before that, yeah, V2, Escape from Hell, Tim Limiterman, Profile.
Oh, okay, V2 is not good.
It's not good.
Okay, that might be his
one. The big one that came before this was Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Oh, Jesus. I didn't realize he did the Ben-Hur remake.
The Ben-Hur remake.
Okay, well, he's been on a downward spiral since Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Let's say that the Ben-Hur remake, and then I would rather watch this than the Ben-Hur remake.
Okay, so he came out of the box swinging in 2004. In fact, I saw Night Watch in the theater at the Tempe Art House Theater. That's where I saw it, loved it. And Daywatch, strong movie. Wanted was interesting. It wasn't my favorite, but it was decent. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, strong. And then after that, it seems like he's just gone on this Ben-Hur, Yolki 5, Yolki Profile. 5. Has anyone heard of these movies? V2, Escape from Hell, and then Mercy seems to be his most profile, largest profile film since Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Well, the other movies that you mentioned in between all of this are all Russian-based. They're all been released in Russia.
Oh, did he go back to Russia?
Yeah, he went back. And basically, yeah, like a lot of like the things that I'm seeing is like after Ben-Hur, which was in 2016, Yo-Kai 5 is actually more or less, that was a Russian film. And then he doesn't come back to the stateside till Mercy.
Yeah, well, that's a shame because he was like the new sexy thing in 2004, David. When Night Watch and Day Watch came out, to me, those films were life-changing.
Oh, yeah.
When I saw that you can make a Lord of the Rings-style story in contemporary times and it actually is believable, I call it Lord of the Rings. I know some people don't, but it is a fantasy. You're dealing with sorcerers, warlocks, witches, people with powers, werewolves, right? They're all types, yeah, of, I think, vampires too. Every fantastical creature you can think of is in these movies.
Is in these movies.
And those movies broke Russian records at the time. At the time, it was the most highest grossing Russian film ever made. So he was a fucking superstar, this guy.
Oh, yeah.
Then he came to America and he was given a film with Angelina Jolie and James McAvoy.
James McAvoy.
And then since then, it's just been kind of a disappointment. And that's a shame. I'm hoping someday this guy finds himself. I was hoping this movie was it. And maybe it will be. However, the box office doesn't look like it's going to save the day. It did come out, I believe, on top for the weekend. But also, it's a very slow weekend.
And honestly, dude, I honestly think that what hurts him the most is the fact that the last film, not saying that basically he was the director of the piece, but the name that that he was attached to is the worst film, is arguably the worst film of 2025, which is War of the Worlds.
Wait,
he was War of the Worlds. The Ice Cube.
How is he involved with that?
He's the producer.
Oh my God.
He's the producer. And I'm like going,
didn't that movie have like a zero on Rotten Tomatoes? Like, I'm being serious. Didn't it have like a zero?
Yeah, at one point it had a zero. But
that's
like
the best thing.
War of the Worlds was, I don't think there's no argument. I think it is the worst movie of last year. But
did you see Ice Cube defend it? He was saying something like, didn't he say they filmed it during COVID?
Yes.
And that give us a break. I'm like, dude, you shouldn't have released. Oh, it's a 4% Rotten Tomatoes. That's the best. That's, oh man, Timur, what have you done?
What have you done to my boy?
What have you become?
Especially since, you know, like, I'm looking at his producer. There are films also that we haven't mentioned that he's been part of. That I'm like, oh my God, he was the producer on that. Was Hardcore Harry?
Oh, that's right.
Hardcore Harry is a freaking blast of a film.
You know what I think he needs to do, Dave? Imagine what his career would be like if he had just connected with a really strong writer.
Especially since, like, I believe his frenetic style as a director, looking at like the movies that we've mentioned, he has a very frenetic action oriented style with the right writer that could bring in a story. He could do something amazing.
Yeah. I think if Timur is listening, David, which you know he's not, our videos are blocked in Russia and our podcast. If he were to get with a really good writer, I think he would quickly become one of the better action directors in cinema.
Oh, yeah.
But for whatever reason, he keeps working with people that write shitty scripts.
Yes.
I mean, who's Marco Van Bell to begin with for this movie starring Rebecca Ferguson and
Chris Pratt?
He's written one movie, Arthur and Merlin, in 2015. And this is the guy you hand the reins to in terms of writing for a tentpole film. This is a tentpole film.
Yes.
It's a lower tier one, but it is. It's a spectacle with major stars, Rebecca Ferguson and Chris Pratt. And you have the screenplay written from this individual. It's a little strange to me.
It is.
I feel like we need to pay closer attention to scripts. They will, because in this case, David, it makes or break. Does it not?
Oh, yeah, it does. Yeah. It really does make and break a film.
All right. So on that note, I think that's enough shit talking for today. I'm going to give this movie, I'm going to give it a 60%.
I am with you there. I was like cracking up when I took the average of the scores that we were discussing from Rotten Tomato, because my score is a 65.
Like, yeah,
it's a fun film. It's entertaining.
Yeah. And that's why I feel like kind of split, because it is entertaining, but it's not written very great.
It's not written good.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, that's it. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Hello. Very nice to meet you. I'd like to know about sex change operation.
I see.
Cut. No good for sound.
Well, fucking hell, Lloyd.
Man, game over, man. It's game over.
the fuck are we gonna do now? What are we gonna do?
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
I'll be back.